Hour number two, Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game on this Tuesday. We're live at the Dunkin' in East Nashville, 926 Gallatin Avenue, where you can bring a stuffed toy by. We're partnered with the Nashville Children's Alliance, so making some kids happier this holiday season. Let's say hello to Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, who just got word he is going to sign with the Bears practice squad. So congratulations, Tim. It seems to be a trend in the NFL.
I mean, I'd like to be like local. I don't think in the temperature in Chicago I would be able to throw a football more than 13 yards.
So, I mean, let's just start with this. He's Philip Rivers is 44. He's going to be eligible for the Hall of Fame next year, or now, I guess. And he's decided to sign with the Colts practice squad. I mean, I look at it as, is he actually going to see the field? Probably not. But, like, what is the point? Why do you think he wanted to do this?
Well, here's what I think. I think it's been well documented, his relationship with Shane Steichen. They've had a really long relationship. And, in fact, I think that, Rivers, who's coaching high school football, is doing, like, a derivative of the things that he did with Shane Steichen. I think he's got a still has a close relationship with him. He obviously is, one of the all-time players in the NFL. And so, while he's removed physically from playing, I think that he's, I think they've been in contact. I think they've talked a lot. I think they see things the same way. I think the idea that if you're signing somebody right now to bring him in, presumably, Riley Leonard would be the starter. But if he had to get out of a game, who could maybe do that? I think, believe it or not, in some ways, Philip Rivers probably gives you a better chance than, signing some guy that's, been in someone else's camp or was with somebody else in the preseason that's got very little NFL experience. It seems crazy, but, at the same time, I think I can see the thought process behind it.
Yeah, certainly it's obviously gotten our attention and a lot of people's attention that he has decided to do that. I'm a little concerned.
It makes me think, by the way, during our individual periods this year during the season, we should have had Ben. We should have had Matthew. We should have pushed them more. I think we took it way too easy on them. Just think of the help that Ben Jones could have been for Cam Ward this year.
Right.
Think of the help, Matthew could have been for Cam Ward this year. Just that's a missed opportunity by me. I apologize.
So, honest question: how much do you and Matthew throw? When was the last time either one of you, legit, not just tossed it, threw the ball?
Okay, so last year, during the summertime, not this past summer, the summer prior, we, for whatever reason, had one quarterback at our practice. And so I threw a bunch. And my arm was so sore the next day. And we had a similar situation the next day where we just didn't, guys were playing travel baseball, whatever. I didn't have quarterbacks to throw. So I tried to throw again the next day and I tore my UCL. And so if I want to ever throw again, I would need Tommy John surgery, which I'm not doing at 48 years old. So that was my last time. Now Matthew's last time, he'd probably go out and throw right now and be totally fine. I think he threw at tight end university this past summer. So he'd be okay.
Interesting. Well, and I'm sorry to laugh at the UCL, but I'd probably do that too. So,
hey, here's how you can tell if somebody is totally done. Okay, I think we had this conversation with Rodgers this past offseason. If a guy who played quarterback throws in the offseason and puts cleats on, then he's still willing to play. If he doesn't, then it probably means that it's over. So I'll give you an example. Like Ryan Tannehill, this must have been over a year ago, so I don't want to speak for what he's doing now. Like he came over to Ensworth and worked out through with cleats on. And I think the Raiders maybe, toyed with the idea of signing him. So if you're asking me, do I think it would make more sense for the Colts to sign Ryan Tannehill? I do. And I know as recently as whatever, you know, 16 months ago, you know, or whatever, maybe 14 months ago, he was working out with cleats on. That's usually a good indicator.
Is that like when a guy goes to the gym and puts on the elbow brace and the knee brace and all that other stuff? Is that the same thing?
Listen, you're a former O-lineman, okay? When you would squat and power clean, it means you were still in it. The minute that stopped, it was over. It's like normalizing a boxer, you know? It's like once that stuff stops, like, yeah, I'm good. I'm out.
You know, it's funny you say that because when I stopped playing, I've never done a clean since then.
I mean, it's if everyone wants to know, like, oh, hey, is Brett Favre going to still play? I don't know. Go watch. Is he throwing the cleats on? He is. Yep, he's still in. Aaron Rodgers. UCLA with cleats on with DK Metcalf. Still in the game, baby. Still in the game. It's how it works.
Oh, I love that. Tim Hasselbeck is with us. Tim, a serious question for once for me, surprising or not. How good could Shedeur Sanders be if he got with a coach that really developed him? Because he threw some really good passes on Sunday versus the Titans. He's thrown good passes at Colorado, but I don't think he's been properly developed. I think the guy's got a lot of talent. Am I just missing the boat on this?
Well, so I actually believe that he's been well coached. You know, Pat Shurmur has been a head coach twice in the NFL, has been play caller multiple times, you know, was really tabbed by Dion to coach Shedeur because he wanted him to get ready to be able to play in the pros. I think the guys in Cleveland do a good job of coaching the position. I think that he's, in terms of knowing how to play the position and being coached well to do it, I think he's been given good instruction, and I think that he's, in many ways, shown that he'll play that way. I just think the bigger story for Shedeur in terms of, you know, what happened in terms of how he was drafted and what people saw as the potential in him was more in the realm of, you know, how physically capable is he? And I think one of the things he's done, you know, while it's not a huge sample size, I think his first start, you saw very little. I think in these recent, you know, games you've seen, you know, physically he can do things that you need a guy to do. So, I don't know what his opportunity will be, but I think that his NFL snaps have helped him more than they've hurt him in terms of, you know, getting a chance to be an NFL starter. Whereas you look around the league at other guys that maybe came into the league in a similar fashion or even drafted lower, like some of those guys have proved, like, yeah, they don't deserve to get a chance to be a starter ever. I think Shedeur is proving otherwise.
I think it's truly unfair, Tim, to compare Shedeur to Cam Ward right now. Different teams, different everything, but yet people want to do that. I think it's unfair to both players.
Yeah, because here's the deal. If Shedeur Sanders would play like Cam Ward, he wouldn't get a chance again. Like the kid Brosmer in Minnesota. He's not going to get another chance. He got his chance, came into the league as an undrafted player. He has not played well. He won't get another shot. And so, like, that's how his situation will work. You know, I think that, you know, when you look at guys that came in as first rounders, their leash is longer. Guys that did not, you know, they have a smaller window of opportunity to prove that they can play. And that's why I think that, like, if you go to look at Shedeur's first start, he really wasn't given a chance to do much at all. The way the game went, it just wasn't asked to do anything where you could really feel like you were learning about what type of player he could be. I think it's since changed, you know, since his first start, and then it looks like, you know, we're going to get about a month of him being a starter to figure out, you know, where he is. If he plays at a high level, I think that he's still, you know, like, while maybe deserving of a chance to be a starter, may not get one because of the situation that he's in. And so now he'll be, you know, trying to find a spot, you know, to prove that he could maybe be a starter.
Tim, I mean, you played the position. You played it at Boston College. You coach a quarterback position. You know football. What's the common denominator with great quarterbacks? I mean, what does Marino, Favre, Elway, Montana, Big Ben, all these guys, what do they have one common denominator that made them great?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that I would say for quarterbacks that have success is that they're great decision makers. So I would say, like, making great decisions is one, and then I would say being an accurate passer is two. So, like, those are things, you know, probably beyond, like, the, you know, the willingness to be a competitor and being able to play and in critical moments and things like that. I think those are the two most important traits, because, like, a guy you didn't mention who probably, like, deserves to be in that conversation would be Drew Brees. Like, he wasn't, you know, he didn't have the rocket arm like other guys. And I think you'd even say a similar thing for, you know, a guy like Brady. Like, it really wasn't about the physical skills for Brady. It was, he was a great decision maker and he was an accurate passer. So I think those are the two most important things that you, like, those are the two most important, like, physical, I guess, or I don't even know if they're necessarily physical, but, like, you know, traits of a quarterback that I think are non-negotiables. You can be really smart and have a huge arm. If you make bad decisions, you're going to stink, you know? And so I think those are the most important factors to if a guy can have sustained success playing quarterback.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. We'll have more with him coming up next. Chasing Big Joe on this Tuesday, 102.5 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game here on this Tuesday. We're live at Dunkin' in East Nashville, continuing our conversation with ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck and, of course, head coach at Innsworth. Tim, I watched the Monday night game last night, and if you're an Eagles fan, I'm concerned. But if you're a Chargers fan, I'm intrigued, because even though Justin Herbert's numbers don't blow you away, they're finding ways to win games and might be getting hot at the right time. What do you think?
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge for the Chargers is the fact that they're just so beat up front on their offensive line that ultimately when it comes down to it and you get into the postseason, like, I think that's going to be the thing that derails them. Now, because Herbert is so good, because they're well coached, and Amarian Hampton back is a big deal, and because they are talented on defense, you know, it's not going to be a walk in the park for anybody, but I just think there are limits to that team. And then if you're the Eagles, yeah, you've got to be really concerned that, you know, the Bears, you know, rushed for well over 200 yards on you. You've been unable to run the football, and you know, in critical moments like the one we saw last night, you know, Jalen Hurts just hasn't been the same guy as he's been in the past. So, yeah, it just feels, and there's a lot of heat just in typical Philly fashion on head coach, coordinators, quarterback, all the drama that seems to always kind of follow you in Philadelphia.
So when I look, I'm going to see if you agree with me on this. When I look at the NFC, I'm a believer in the Rams. I'm a believer in the Packers, the Seahawks. I'd even put the 49ers in that equation. And I'm not writing the Eagles off because of experience, but they definitely got some issues that they have to work out. When I look at the AFC, it's really the Broncos and the Patriots, and then I'm not sure on who else. Do you think there's another team in the AFC that should be getting more credit right now, or do you think I'm on the right track?
No, I think you're on the right track, because, you know, you maybe could be convinced of the Colts before their quarterback injury. You know, Jacksonville definitely has not done anything to you know, earn your trust. Kansas City's probably not even making the postseason. The Ravens have, you know, I think it was an embarrassing effort this past week. And, you know, why would you, the team that beat them, the Steelers, why would you believe in them, how up and down they've been? So, look, I think the other team that you could look at and you say, all right, I could turn on it any Sunday and feel like, yeah, they're going to win, would maybe be Buffalo.
Yeah.
No, I mean, and look, even with Buffalo, like, it's, what was that, a 4-8 team? You know, now, granted, they get Burrow back, but, you know, that there needed to be some pretty good fortune for Buffalo to win that football game. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. You know, the one team that you didn't mention in the NFC that I think, I don't know, has gotten my attention at least some, especially if you're going to, you know, believe in Green Bay, would be Chicago. And I know they've only beaten one team with a winning record. One team with a winning record who played their starting quarterback against them. But I do think they can run the football. I think the way they played in Green Bay, I came away more encouraged than discouraged for the Bears.
Tim, J.J. Watt just tweeted this out. He said, fun fact about Phillip Rivers. Phillip Rivers runs the same offense as the Colts do that he runs for his son in high school. Him and Shane Steichen speak weekly about this, discuss plays, and even talk about film. So familiarity with the scheme should be no problem for Phillip Rivers whatsoever. And that's what you told us at the beginning of the show.
The biggest thing is, like, you need to sign somebody that can walk into the huddle and call a play. Like, it sounds, you know, kind of ridiculous, but, like, walk into the huddle, take command of the huddle, call the play, and, like, give yourself at least a chance to get it going. And, look, if they're in a two-minute situation, no one's going to expect Rivers to come in and play amazing. But what if you're in a four-minute drive scenario and you need to get one first down to seal a game? Like, would you prefer Rivers over, I don't know, Brett Rippin? Or you probably would.
No, yeah, I totally agree with you on that. I want to ask you this, too. There was news came yesterday that Marcel Reed's going to stay at Texas A&M. Arch Manning's probably going to stay at Texas. Are we seeing a trend now where these quarterbacks are getting paid so much in college they can develop more, that they're going to start staying in college instead of going? Because normally 10 years ago, Marcel Reed's going to the pros. Arch Manning's going to the next level. Are we seeing that paradigm shift, Tim?
Yes and no. So here's why. I don't think that Marcel or Arch would be the number one quarterback taken. You know, some of that's just like the process is brutal in terms of the evaluation. So even though they're, you know, both going to be nice prospects, like, it doesn't mean they're necessarily, you know, for sure going to go to the top half of the first round. Now, like, could they throughout the evaluation process? Maybe. But unless they're getting that information now, which they're not, then why wouldn't you stay in school and make, you know, more money than – you know, than you would probably make otherwise in year one in the NFL, right? So I think that's – and then in the process of doing that, I think what you also do is you give yourself an opportunity to develop, play better so that you can improve, you know, your draft situation. But it's my understanding, you know, that – and I feel like I can say this with pretty good confidence in terms of things that I've learned about various people. If you're a starting quarterback in the SEC in 2026, you're going to make over $5 million.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the scenario that you're in. So make $5 million or and improve your draft status by playing well. So, I mean, that's in an offense you already know, you know, against guys that are younger than you now, than you know, were the prep, you know, like, there's so many factors to it. So, yeah, I think that's very different than being like, hey, you know, this is free labor. I've got to take out an insurance policy. Where am I getting the money to do that? And, you know, I might as well just, whatever, even if I'm picked 23 of the draft, go sign a four-year contract with a fifth-year option and start making money to play the game.
I love it. Tim, in mid-December, would you rather have in the NFL the absolute best defense at this point or the best offense?
I think I'd rather have the best defense.
And that leads me I think the Texans, and I'm not going to say 85 Bears, like, obviously, yeah, they're nowhere near. But that pass rush, Tim, and the way they hawk the ball, like, you got three or four guys around the ball every time. That defense is special. And I'm telling you, that might get them all the way to the Super Bowl.
The thing that they're doing right now is they're just rushing four every time. Doesn't matter if it's third and four, if it's third and 12. Like, they just rush four guys. Watch them when you play. Like, I don't know what, you know, their blitz rates are, you know, and it may get distorted based on time of year that you do it and all that stuff. But if you look at this past weekend, for example, they essentially were they were pretty basic in terms of what they did. And kind of to your point, when you can get home with rushing four, cause problems and pressure on the quarterback rushing four, then it really helps your secondary play at a high level, and that's definitely what happened.
It is. I just remember there's a coach along the way that one time said, on defense, he said, in the pitcher, I want to see four helmets. And they're like, what? He's like, when they're making a tackle, I want to see four helmets in that pitcher. And I was like, ah. And the Texans do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and by not having to bring pressure, you talk about the ball hawking secondary, that's what they do because they're not creating space by – you know, eliminating people in the secondary at the second or third level by bringing pressures. So, you know, when you can just basically say, yep, our pass rush will get home, that's pretty helpful.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. Real quick, when you watch Fernando Mendoza, what qualities do you see that tell you he's ready for Sunday?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. I don't know what he's going to look like, you know, in terms of physicality. But he can launch the football. He plays with a stronger arm than people maybe would think that he has. So that's I just mentioned that first because I think that's one of the things that really kind of just stuck out to me a little bit from this past week's game. And then it goes back to kind of things I said before. I think he's a great decision maker. I think how good he is at protecting the football. And then he's accurate. And then on top of it, like, there's other things that I love. You can tell he loves learning and playing the position. You think of the shot that he took this past week, and you know, I think he missed one play. Like, I would love the mental and physical toughness. You pair that with good decision making and plenty of physical tools. Those are things that lead you to believe he'd be a good player.
What are some things that, if any, do you see with Diego Pavia that make you think he could be an NFL prospect, or is it going to be – I mean, I know he's small. Could it be a lofty goal for him?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lofty goal, but I think that – and, you know, I've had a bit of a relationship going back to, I guess, actually when he came into town just to watch spring practices before he was enrolled. I met him back then. You know, we've had a little bit of correspondence, and he asked me one time, he's like, do you think I'll get a shot? And, you know, my answer to him was, look, if you continue to compete the way that you've competed, I do. I think that somebody will give you a chance. And he's competed at an incredibly high level. Like, he might win the Heisman Trophy. And so, when you look at the success he's had, which is certainly based on kind of grit and determination and competition and all those things, that's going to be super appealing to somebody. So, you know, how it works out, I don't know. But, you know, people are going to pick apart his size, the fact that he doesn't look like traditional NFL quarterbacks look. And, you know, people are going to have an issue with, you know, or at least, you know, have apprehension, you know, in terms of the delivery and throwing motion and arm strength and all of those things. He certainly passed the ball extremely well in the SEC, and his production has been incredible in the SEC. And part of the NFL game has changed to kind of run more Saturday concepts than just Sunday concepts. So I think he's going to get a chance, and it'll be hard to prove it, you know, with the opportunities that he gets, but people have doubted him his whole career.
Let me ask you this. A quarterback you know very well because you played the same position at the same school as him. Is he bigger than Doug Flutie? Does he have any Doug Flutie anything in him?
He's way bigger than Doug Flutie, and in terms of, you know, there's a difference between being short and small. Like, you know, and he's already taller than Doug. So he's definitely taller than Doug. He is definitely bigger than him. I mean, he's way more stout and put together. I think they're very different players. There was a twitchiness to Doug. I mean, people tried to move Doug to the secondary, you know, when he was a player. You know, I think Diego, you know, if somebody forced him to play a position outside of quarterback, you know, it would be, you know, linebacker, fullback, H-back type thing, you know, for him. So I think they're very different in terms of stature and all that stuff. So I think that here's what I think he has to hope somebody sees him as. He has to hope that somebody sees him much closer to Taysom Hill than Tim Tebow. That's the reality. And, you know, Taysom Hill, you know, at one point was, you know, a kickoff return man in Green Bay. Taysom Hill can roll. You know, and you know, that was not Tebow's strength. Tebow, to my knowledge, did not pass, you know, incredibly, incredibly fast 40 times and things like that. You know, shuttle drills, things of that nature. You know, those things are going to matter for Diego in terms of, you know, his height and his size and those types of things. But somebody might see him like Taysom Hill, you know. And remember, Sean Payton tried to make Taysom Hill a full-time quarterback. So, you know, it only takes one. That's, I think, what, you know, in terms of the best case scenario for Diego is that somebody would view him that way.
I love it. Before you go, if you had a choice, Tim, between picking these two quarterbacks, who would you take? Matthew Hasselbeck or John Dutton?
Hey, listen. People, you know, people forget. Like, I don't know what Matthew was, you know, like top. You know, we're way ahead of guys that are in the Hall of Fame in terms of passing yards, touchdowns, things like that when he retired. Here's the other thing about him. I think I've referenced this to you guys before. I think it's critical playing the quarterback position. In the 18 or 20 years, whatever he played in the NFL, do you know how many seasons he ended up on the IR?
Zero.
Zero. Zero. And it's not easy to do that. I mean, you think about really talented guys that just couldn't stay healthy or those types of things. Being available and being able to play at a starter level is hard to do. So I think you actually named a movie character or a TV character.
I don't John Dutton stuff. Was taken before your brother in the 1998 draft out of Nevada by the Dolphins.
John Dutton? Yeah, I've never heard of him.
I think he played in the Arena League, and then Jonathan Quinn was a couple before that as well.
Heard of him. He's and honestly, if you wanted to sign 50-year-old quarterbacks, Jonathan Quinn looks like he could still play.
Yes, he does.
Tim, appreciate it as always. Good stuff. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, see you, fellas.
Yeah, Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, joining us on the program. We'll react to some of that interesting stuff on Diego Pavia that he had there. He always throws some nuggets out there.
You set the picture out because he does a Scott Van Pelt thing every Sunday night. So when I had Tim on TV a month ago, I was like, hey, you still doing that thing with Van Pelt? He's like, thanks for watching. I'm like, my bad. I'm sorry.
We're live today at Dunkin' in East Nashville, 926 Gallatin Avenue. Bring a stuffed toy by. You can donate it here, and you can also qualify for a four-pack of tickets to the all-inclusive 501 Club at Bridgestone Arena to a Preds home game. And again, special thanks to Metro Nashville Police Department, the Catalano Group, the Bluemont Group, Family Leisure, Thompson Machinery, Richmar Flores, Right Time HVAC, and Relidyne. You can find information, the list of Dunkins that you can drop things off at, where we're all going to be. Just go to thegamenashville.com/toy. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game.